Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jem Deducci, and what we're doing this time round is... Do you feel the power of the gladiators? That's my attempt at doing the noise from the TV phenomenon that's been around in one form or another for well over 30 years, and obviously with a name like Gladiators... harks back to ancient Rome and also deals with elements such as ancient Greek Olympic Games and wrestling. Gladiators wears its pop culture relationship to history on its sleeve, if it had sleeves, but also is tied in with other elements of pop culture as well. It's really, really interesting for something that is so child-friendly and so gloriously camp and silly and just great fun. I am going to start with the creation of Gladiators, which if you are British, you may not actually realize, and if you're American, you may not realize this either, but it actually started in America in 1989 called American Gladiators. So if you're of a certain age, you may remember a relatively cult show that ran for 6 or 7 years in America called American Gladiators, and you have these incredibly muscle-bound individuals being the gladiators versus everyday contestants who would then do various different physical activities, powerball, the tilt, the pyramid, etc., hanging tough, all these different... So each game, each gladiatorial combat, if you like, or gladiatorial challenge would be completely different to the previous one. And you're doing these different rounds to accrue points. So at the end, you're going through an obstacle course against your other competitor, and whoever wins, wins the game show. It's ultimately a game show, a very physical one rather than, you know, what's the capital of Peru, for example? Lima, for the record. So anyway, that's the basic format of it, and while it clearly did well enough to be renewed year after year in America, it just went to a different level when it was created and repurposed. They didn't show the American version in Britain. They filmed it all in Britain with the same format, but with British people in it, and it was just called Gladiators because, let's face it, technically there had been British gladiators before. Just a few short millennium and a half earlier. So it was called just Gladiators here in the UK. Therefore, once it became so big, and there were other countries who did Gladiators, and there were international tournaments of it. So America, which obviously has the biggest population and is the most powerful country in the world and most influential in terms of its pop culture, but this is one of the weird situations where America looks second best to places like Britain or Australia or what have you. There were international ones, and in Britain, at its peak, it was earning 15 million viewers a week, and it ran in Britain from 1992 to the year 2000. So it actually ran for longer in the UK than it did in America, and got bigger viewership than in America. In 1992, when it first came out, I was in university, and it was the classic thing where I'm sure that if you were a six-year-old, you watched it unironically and you had your favourite gladiator and so on and so forth. We were watching it on a Saturday evening before perhaps we would go out on the town, you know, go to pubs and clubs and things like that. And it was the perfect thing as you were making your toasted cheese sandwiches, because that's all I could kind of afford at those days, just mucking around in the house and ironically watching it. We all eventually had opinions on all these different characters, but you could obviously see the theatricality of it and the silliness of it. That's not to say that when the actual games were on, everybody clearly was putting 100% into it. I nearly said 110%. I actually really hate that phrase, because 100% means all. You can't do 110%. That's me being nitpicky, but you get the point. It was genuinely a phenomenon and genuinely full contact, and you really had to know what you were doing. Me and the other people in my house in year two, we actually joined the Gladiators fan club, and we had a poster on the wall. Also, sidebar, one of the most ridiculous animals, in my opinion, ever created is the Highland cow. I love the Highland cow. The Highland cow is gorgeous. But what part of evolution thought, do you know what colour we should make cows in Scotland, this lush, verdant country, this beautiful country known for its wetness and therefore lush, green countryside? Yeah, let's make them bright orange. And also, let's make sure the hair grows over their eyes so they can't see predators coming anywhere near them. Because of that, we had a wall where we just stuck lots of things on it. There was the gladiator poster, but there was Heland Coo Corner, where there were lots of various postcards and pictures of Highland cows in the corner. You didn't need to know that. That's got nothing to do with gladiators, but that's a little bit of my student years. And so we watched it for a few years. I remember when I finished university, I still watched it a bit. It gave me warm, glowy feelings about my uni days. But like everybody else, after a while, it wore off. It had had its run time. And so it finished in 2000. In the UK. For the record, it was on ITV. That's the first commercial channel. We also have the BBC, which doesn't run advertisements. So ITV had it from 1992 to 2000. Then it all went quiet. Then Sky, a satellite broadcaster, they tried to resurrect it in 2008. Didn't really catch fire. Sky has much smaller viewing numbers than the likes of ITV and BBC. But why am I doing this? Because it's back, baby, for 2024, which is over 30 years after the original series was launched. It's amazing, that fact. So we are talking about generations that aren't familiar with it, and it is something that reflects a long period of history in the world of pop culture, as well as history, which we'll come on to in a little bit. But in 2024, the BBC had bought the rights. So as I said, it was ITV first time round, then Sky, and now the BBC. And the BBC is generally seen as a bit more highbrow. But that's not to say on a Saturday night they're going to be running documentaries. And it's been a hit. It's regularly getting over 6 million views, which, if you may recall, hang on, you said in the 1990s in its peak it was reaching over 15 million. True. But in the modern world of broadcasting, in the era of streaming, getting 6 million plus when the other channels are getting like 2, 3 million, it's a monster hit. And of course, that doesn't include people recording it and watching it later, or people going onto iPlayer or catch-up TV, etc., etc. It's a genuine hit and phenomenon. Contender! Ready! Gladiator! Ready! The thing where I'm going to sort of go to Greek wrestling is because wrestling seems to have been originally formulated as a sport, as opposed to grappling, which will be in any combat in any period of history or prehistory, but it as a competitive sport in ancient Greece. Ancient Greece seems to have invented a lot of the athletic sports, athlete, these are all Greek origin names. So this stuff goes back 2.5, nearly 3,000 years. As a combat sport where points can be scored and there are strict rules applied. It's been used throughout Western history after its invention. But what's interesting is, in America, there was a big change between wrestling in Europe and America. And you all know what I'm talking about when we get into the 1980s, where suddenly the wrestlers, yeah, everybody had a personality. Perhaps one of the greatest personalities in combat would be Muhammad Ali, which predates this idea of wrestling. But it was really elevated in the 1980s in America, where I always like the line from the wrestlers when they turn around and say, it's fixed, not fake. In other words, throwing somebody to the ground, there isn't a lot of padding on the ground. It's flexible, it's plywood, it's not going to hurt nearly as much as being thrown against a concrete floor. There's some give in it. And obviously some of these things that they do, you have to have, in essence, consent and help from the other person. The classic one being a guy's dazed and like lying there on the ground, so somebody then climbs up onto the ropes and then jumps onto them. Well, any person would normally, if it was an actual combat fight, that person would move out of the way, but they're there and they actually catch the person as they throw themselves onto them to cushion the blow. So there's a lot of camaraderie and teamwork going on, even if it's one-on-one fighting in wrestling terms. But the point here is, it wasn't just like, here's Kevin, he's a good wrestler. But the idea of this villain called a heel and the hero type of wrestler was then elevated. You had the likes of, yes, admittedly, Hulk Hogan was his name, but you also had things like The Undertaker, these sort of larger-than-life people where half of the fun was hearing the grudge that they would have against each other, the smack mouth at talking before the events and so on and so forth. And there were running narratives in these things like, oh, he stole his crown, he cheated or whatever, and people would love it. By comparison, in Britain, we had Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks, which I loved as a six-year-old, but is noticeably, and Big Daddy had a catchphrase. He would get everybody to chant, easy, easy. And I remember my babysitter, who was a lady who I presume would have been a young woman at the time of World War II, and now was an older woman, now looking after two kids for a bit of money. She was whipped up into a frenzy over it. In the UK, it was turned up to 3 or 4 out of 10. In America, they'd mastered this art form, this performance before the actual physical event, and had turned it up all the way up to 10. People would come on to music, they would have catchphrases, costumes even. I remember just one occasion, I can't remember the circumstances, but I'm not a huge fan of the American wrestling stuff. It's one of these things where I respect it, I get what it's doing, but I am not the target audience. And I remember there was one guy who came on, and he was meant to be radioactive. And I remember the commentators saying, look at his eyes. Oh, they're kind of glowing green. And he obviously had contacts in, which there's a part of me thinking that you don't want to have contacts in if you're doing wrestling. But there was this kind of make-believe about it in America that no Brit would ever take seriously. No, nobody could say with a straight face. It's like, what, he's actually the result of an atomic accident, nuclear waste is what's caused him to be radioactive. Well, he needs to be taken to a hospital, not fight in a combat arena. But little kids loved it, and perhaps men who should know better loved it, and women who should know better loved it. However, this idea of the personality was picked up by the gladiators. And so all of the gladiators, who were all incredible athletes, a lot of them, particularly the men, were power lifters, they were bodybuilders, and they were ginormous. We're talking about people with the same kind of physique as Arnold Schwarzenegger up against Barry from Peterborough. Good luck, Barry. But it did lead to more and more good athletes being pulled out of the general population to try and fight off these people. But the gladiators themselves, like I said, they were normal people. They were normal people with massive muscles. They had normal names, like Mary or Sarah. Oh, by the way, of course, the women gladiators fought the women and the male gladiators fought the men. So, you know, Jeff, Keith, Sandra, etc. These were their real names, but that isn't gladiator enough. So they, back in the day, they had names like Wolf and Jet and Shadow.
It's Jeff! And he's going to be trying to pull 20 stone of the mighty warrior!
And it led to, again, fan clubs for these things. And this is where, again, I'm going to reveal a little bit about me and say Jet was kind of one of the first gladiators that really broke out. She was a very attractive woman. Of course, all these people were physically fit. And because of what they had to do, they had to wear fairly figure-hugging leotards and lycra and all this kind of stuff. And me and the fellow men in the university days, we all had the hots for Jet. And we were not alone. Jet was a bit of a amorous target for many young men back in the early 1990s. And she ended up getting quite seriously injured in, I think it was season 5 or 6. That's where she just like left it. And this is the thing, because of all the razzmatazz, the theme tune. The theme tune in America was first written by Bill Conti. That's the guy who wrote the music for the original Rocky. So exactly the sort of person you'd want to write the theme tune to Gladiators. So it was absolutely perfect, but everything was so heightened. And indeed, for health and safety purposes, if you have a 200-pound man throwing himself at you, you do need some padding. I mentioned this in the wrestling bit. But if you're dealing with general population being filmed in front of a live studio audience, you can't have blood. You know, there are kids in the audience. So there was lots of padding. For example, the pugil sticks, which is perhaps one of the most famous things. Two people standing on a platform, raised up, let's say 2.5-3 meters up above a big sea of padding. Normal competitor versus gladiator. They're wearing head coverings, think of something that you would see in amateur boxing, and everybody's got mouth guards in, and they would have a quarter staff each, but on the end of each quarter staff were these two huge pads, which actually led some weight to it, some oomph to it, so you could actually knock people off. But when they're all covered in pads, wearing padding above a big padded floor, it looks like nobody could get hurt. But again, you get wiped out by somebody weighing 200 pounds, the padding stops you actually bleeding. Doesn't stop things like concussion, and particularly these drops and things like that. You may not be ready to drop and fall, so you might fall badly. In the case of Jet, she fell badly and hurt her back. And so all of the old gladiators have been saying about the new gladiators, going, no, this is serious stuff. People can get hurt. Perhaps most infamously, another female gladiator from the early era, Panther, back in 1994, so only a few years into it, she was playing a game called Tilt. She fell really badly and she had a serious injury to her back. Now, she did come back for 2 more series, but as a teenager, as a young man, I was wondering why we sometimes saw gladiators and sometimes didn't. It's because they had a rota of injuries, you know, like football teams and things like that. It got bad. Jet, if you like, was the one that made the men happy, but also she was one of the good guys, in inverted commas. But then you had Wolf, this bodybuilder, who had the sort of classic longish hair, although he had a bit of a widow's peak going on, and he was one of the bad guys. It, you know, just like in the wrestling side of things, he was a heel. He was the one constantly being admonished by the referee. He would kind of cheat. But everyone kind of loved to hate someone like Wolf. Shadow as well, that was a controversial one. He was a really huge guy, looked really intensely at some of the contestants, and there were times when he seemed to take some pretty dangerous tackles. He was accused of taking steroids. The size of these guys, I'm sure there was a lot of steroid use, but in the end he was found that he had been using steroids and was taken off the show. I had a look into it. I was like, well, what happened next for him? He went from dead end job to dead end job, and then he was convicted of a pretty violent crime in 2021 and is currently serving prison time for 6 years. So, you know, not all these people have a happy ending, even if they do survive their injuries. So that's some examples of the old guard, if you like.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Like, but again, they know in the new version, what's interesting is it looks very similar to the old version. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. The thing is, people got a bit bored of it. But it was huge for a long time. So let's use that winning formula. People are bored of it. It's been 24 years since the last time anybody seen this stuff, apart from the one on Sky, which nobody watched. So there is a whole new generation and a half of people who have never seen this. And what I found quite interesting, because I wanted to do the prep work for this, is I recorded an episode and I was just sitting there just before the recording, because I wanted to check up on all this stuff. It's like, I can't write stuff about things I haven't seen. That would be a bit disingenuous of me. So I'm sitting there watching it, and they literally just started the first game, and my youngest son, 15 years old, I didn't tell him anything about this. He just walks in, the whistle's about to go to start the round. He goes, "What is this?" And then he sees the way these gladiators are completely wiping out these guys. And he goes, "Aren't there any rules?" He goes, "Can you really tackle someone like that?" He's got his shirt. He's used to football. And it's like, nope, this is all fine. This is all above board. And he goes, "Wow, this is violent." He then said, "Can you save it for me? I want to watch more of it." So instantly, you got this 15-year-old who has no reference to this show whatsoever, watches 60 seconds of it and goes, "Wow, I'm in." That shows you how entertaining this is. This is never going to threaten best screenplay. This is not going to be a reimagining of Shakespeare. But do you know what this is? This is pure family-friendly entertainment. And there needs to be more of that stuff out there. Well-honed family fun. So with updating it, clearly you obviously cannot have the original gladiators. Because if they were, let's say, 25 when it started in 1992, well, now they would be 57. They are not allowed to do that kind of stuff. They wouldn't have the ability. What was interesting, going back to the earlier version, the original version, when I say original, I mean the British version in the 90s, there was a woman whose surname was Huthart. I remember that. And she, this was just a normal contestant, and she was a beast. She bullied the female gladiators. She annihilated her competitor in the final obstacle course. She was amazing. And eventually, if I remember correctly, she ended up becoming one of the gladiators. That bit I can't swear to. At least she did it for a little bit of time. Maybe it was just for a celebrity event or whatever. Can't swear to that. But what I do know is she went in and became a stunt woman. And in the first Pierce Brosnan Bond movie, GoldenEye, she was the stunt woman for Honor Top, the main female villain. And what Pierce Brosnan is clearly just the loveliest man ever. But what he found hilarious is his kids, who had been watching Gladiators, were more excited about meeting her, who was being a stunt woman on set, than the fact that their dad had become James Bond. So that shows you, if you like, in the mind of, I don't know how old his kids were at that time, 6-year-olds, 8-year-olds, that's how big Gladiators was bigger than James Bond in the 1990s. Wow. So, yes, that's a slight aside. So obviously you can't have the originals. There was a famous, I say famous, but the referee was this no-nonsense, silver-haired Scottish guy in the original who would famously say, "Contenders ready! Gladiators are ready!" And then, "On my first whistle!" So he would sort of, he had this amazing commanding voice, but I happen to know he's still with us, but he's now 92. Again, too old for the new generation. So there is a new generation, but just like I mentioned, there was Wolf and Jet and Shadow. You are still going to have these cool names. So you have the likes of Giant and Electro and Comet and Apollo, and you can just see fire. Things like that. And in the intros, just like in the old intros, every time the gladiators introduced in the opening credits, they've got their little pose, they've got their little gimmick. Like, for example, the woman playing fire, she sort of holds her hands out knowing that digital fire is going to be added to them. She can't actually do that for real. If at any moment you're going to just walk up to one of these people in their lycra and say, "Really? This is what your life's been leading to. You're going to be standing there being called Comet in Lycra in front of screaming 6-year-olds. That's what you wanted out of your life?" First of all, they'd probably say, "Yeah, I'm having the time of my life here." But also, you know, if you're going to inspect this, you're doing it wrong. As I have said previously, you've got to judge something for what it's trying to do. Pride and Prejudice is a beautiful, subtle satire of society in the early 1800s, and a little bit about an early form of feminism, what it's like to be a woman under such circumstances. That is what it's trying to do. That is nowhere near as entertaining as lycra-clad bodybuilders trying to stop somebody trying to score putting a ball in a hoop. That is a very different thing. So credit where credit's due to everybody involved in this. The BBC gets it. They're just trying to have fun with it. It's not going to be the thing that the most people's TV license is going to be charged for. It doesn't have the same gravitas as another Sir David Attenborough documentary series. That one's far more classy, but this is the point. It's not everything can be worthy and classy and noble. Sometimes things just need to be sit at home with a takeaway on a Saturday night and put a big fat smile on your face. That's the glory of something like Gladiators. Whether or not it leads to a resurgence in other countries, who knows? It's the sort of thing where in America, Netflix might grab it. And if Netflix grabs it, then that'll be a problem for the BBC because Netflix has a more global following. And indeed, some people in Britain might watch the American version. But I don't know, that's just pure conjecture in that situation. But right now, the BBC spent money on it and it's doing well. Both for them and also for the viewers. That's the other important thing that we've got to talk about here. So, yes, just some straight-up family fun. Nothing wrong with that. There is, however, an irony to the date of the fact that Gladiators finished in the year 2000. It just wasn't getting the same level of viewership in the UK. That's the same year that the movie Gladiator came out that won all the Oscars, cleaned up at the box office, and is an example, in my opinion, of a 5-star movie. Everybody seems to be firing on all cylinders. It's great stunt work, it's visually exciting, the acting's excellent, the soundtrack's amazing, the whole thing is a sword and sandal epic that beats every other sword and sandal epic. It's just remarkable. I've heard a few people saying that Ridley Scott's only ever made 2 5-star movies, Alien and Blade Runner. I would agree that those are 5-star movies. But I would also throw in Gladiator there as well. I think it may not be a sci-fi, but it's amazing. But clearly, when we talk about the word gladiator, we are now into the realm of the Romans, and this is where I'm going to talk a bit about that. I have done a whole episode on Gladiator the movie, so if you're wondering why am I not going into it in any more detail, that's why. Okay, simple as that. By the way, I'll just throw this out here. If you have only just come onto this because of Gladiators, and I apologize for me saying it like that, then hello, welcome. Please click subscribe. Please give us a review. And also tell somebody about us. I'm at Jem Deduccio on both Twitter and Threads, or X, or whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean when I say Twitter. And I always tweet out, this is the latest episode. Have a look. You know, please share and do things like that. If you could do that online, great. But actually tell somebody in the office or whatever, or mate, etc. So, hey, there's this fun podcast. If you like it, great. If you don't, I'm sorry. But then again, why would you still be listening to this 25 minutes in? But hey, thank you very much for sticking with me. Yeah. Right. So let's go back to the world of Rome. And as I've said on numerous occasions, hey, I write history books. Some of them are more in-depth than others. I'm pretty good at writing intros too. And my regular, not my only publisher, but my regular publisher, Ambly, they had a series a few years back called X in 100 Facts. Not literally X, but a topic in 100 Facts. So it could be the Anglo-Saxons in 100 Facts. I didn't get to write that one. I really wanted to, but you know, didn't work out. Or Shakespeare in 100 Facts. So periods of history, people from history, etc. I think I wrote more than anybody else. I wrote a total of 4 of them. Things like the British Empire in 100 Facts and the Napoleonic Wars in 100 Facts. But another one pertinent to this conversation is the Romans in 100 Facts. Quite pleased with that one because I cover literally 1,000+ years in 100 Facts. These are short little snippets. And what I like about the 100 Facts books is, well, using Rome as an example, if you want to know more about Roman history, where on earth do you start? You can buy a 300-page book just on Julius Caesar. One person. So where do you start? And therefore, I would say the Romans in 100 Facts. If you have a PhD in ancient history, this is clearly not the book for you. But if you're thinking, I want an overview, the Romans in 100 Facts is a great way to sort of find out, oh, that triggers an interest in this area or that area, or I'd never even heard of that emperor. But what I'm going to do here is read a bit out. You get a fact for free, everybody, which is fact number 12. So it's pretty early on in the book. And it is gladiatorial combat started at funerals. While the exact origins of gladiatorial combat have been lost in the mists of time, Roman writers agree that they took the idea of ceremonial combat between slaves from another culture, possibly Etruscan. Like many things in a civilization that lasted for the best part of a millennium, ideas changed over time. The first story about gladiators in a Roman chronicle appears in the 260s BC on the occasion of a funeral, Decimus Iunius Brutus Sceva commemorated the passing of his father by having 6 gladiators fight in pairs to the death in Rome's cattle market forum. 50 years later, the more familiar displays of gladiatorial combat had become popular, but they were still linked to pagan rituals and specific events rather than taking place purely as entertainment. The games were blood-soaked spectacles of violent combat with men fighting other men, often criminals, and sometimes wild animals. Gladiators frequently became the celebrities of their day. As the years rolled by, the events got bigger, with the peak coming in the late Republic and early Imperial eras. The Colosseum was built between AD 70 and 80 and could seat at least 60,000. It was never actually called the Colosseum by the Romans. Instead, it was referred to as the Flavian Amphitheatre, after the Imperial dynasty which paid for it. By now, the biggest games would last for days and involved hundreds of gladiators. They were a sign of imperial power, and only the emperor could provide such spectacles, such as a mock naval battle. On that occasion, the Colosseum had a temporary lake installed, but this happened only once, as the subsequent construction of underground rooms made it impossible to repeat. Further afield, local dignitaries might sponsor their own displays in places such as Syria or Britain. While even these were horrifyingly expensive, they were still small-time compared to the main events happening in Rome. The name gladiator comes from gladius, a short sword favoured by the infantry of the Roman legions. The weapon itself was of Spanish origin and was thought to have become the weapon of choice after the Roman conquest of Spain during the Second Punic War. In a way, Gladiator was the wrong name for these fighters, as they used a myriad of weapons in a number of scenarios. A Retiarius, for example, would be only lightly armoured and carry a trident and net. No gladius to be seen. The Samnite is what we today think of as a typical gladiator, armed as he was with a gladius, a rectangular shield, a full-face metal helmet, and some protective armour. But there were at least a dozen variations. The gladiators were slaves, surprisingly sometimes female, but at least half a dozen emperors had a go in the arena. The combat was generally rigged in their favour. The decline of the empire and its resources, combined with the rise of Christianity and the banning of pagan events, put an end to the games. So there we go, that's the actual fact. Just to sort of put a little bit of context around there, I mentioned the Second Punic War. The Punic Wars were multiple wars between Rome, the power in the north of the Mediterranean area, and Carthage, the power in the south of the Mediterranean area. The most famous Carthaginian general is that Hannibal guy with the elephants over the Alps. It's more complicated than that, but yeah, so there we go. So that gives you an idea. But the interesting thing is we think about Hannibal happening the same time as Julius Caesar, happening the same time as Hadrian's Wall. These things are separated by centuries. These people could never have possibly met because of the timescape in it. And so similarly, as I may comment there, the gladiatorial games did evolve. The comment I made there about the mock naval battle, it took archaeologists years going, well, how did they do it when there were these underground areas? You know, literally the thing you see in Gladiator with tigers popping out of the ground, stuff like that. That actually happened. Things like lifts, etc., genuinely were there in the underneath of the Colosseum. But then it eventually took some rather smarter archaeologists to say, well, hang on, when did these bits actually get added? And it's like, oh, they were added after the naval battle. That's how they did it. It was on solid ground that they could cover over and waterproof in some way, cover it in tar, for example. That would work. That's how they managed to do a mock naval battle in the Colosseum, which is what I will call it, because when I say Flavian amphitheater, I'm being accurate, but nobody knows what I'm talking about then. And there are smaller amphitheatres and Colosseum-type structures across the whole of the Roman Empire, from Britain on into Syria and North Africa as well. It shows you how popular gladiatorial games became in the peak of the empire. Now, I did mention that Christianity led to the banning of pagan events, but towards the end, you literally had no longer slaves, but volunteers. And that thing about how gladiators became celebrities is true. We've got the names of these gladiators, but of course, a bit like the TV show, they obviously had other names, but they became known as, maybe not as ridiculous as Wolf or Shadow or something like that, but things like the Spaniard, which is the actual name of the gladiator in Gladiator the movie, that's relatively historically accurate. They were quite often named after the areas that they came from. And what's interesting is they were slaves. They had to fight for the amusement of other people. They didn't die quite as often as you may think they did, but they still, absolutely, death and injury was an absolute part of being a gladiator. It's a terrible, awful thing, but it does show you the dichotomy, the hypocrisy of it all, because people would chant, you'd have literally emperors having a favorite gladiator chanting their name, and sometimes these people would be released from indentured slavery. But at the same time, they were more famous than some of the senators. Rich Roman women might spend money to spend a night with a gladiator, which is weird if you think about it. They're a slave. People thought the gladiator's sweat, and sometimes their blood as well, could cure epilepsy. This is the sort of weird thing that they were seen as better than us, but also nobody wanted to be them. It's that excitement. It's that action. It's why we still watch action movies. And we are still viewing, in our millions, gladiators on TV. We're not quite sure what's going to happen next. We're not there for the blood, per se, but sometimes people get injured. We want to see people taking themselves to their physical limits. There is always something interesting about that, whether we're talking about ancient Greek wrestling, gladiatorial combat, or modern-day TV. It's just a very human reaction to this situation. And I find it fascinating that a concept very much diluted for modern tastes, but a basic concept has been around for over 2,000 years, can still get people viewing on a Saturday night. That's it from me, and as always, another episode coming soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.